Hello there. Today is Thursday, December the 12th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg becomes Time Magazine's youngest ever person of the year.
I have been constantly talking about our rapidly declining carbon budgets over and over again. But since that is still being ignored, I will just keep repeating it.
The president continues to defend his actions as Democrats move closer to impeachment. Also ahead, a Nobel Peace laureate defends her country against accusations of genocide. It's all on today's International Edition. Democrats in the U.S. House of Representatives moved closer to impeaching President Donald Trump as he and senior Republicans appear to converge on the idea of a shorter trial once the charges come to the Senate in the new year. The House Judiciary Committee met Wednesday evening to consider formal articles of impeachment, accusing Trump of abusing his power to trying to force Ukraine to investigate political rival Joe Biden and obstructing Congress when lawmakers tried to look into the matter. Democratic Committee Chair Gerald Nadler outlined the charges.
The first article charges that the president used the powers of his public office to demand that a foreign government attack his political rivals. The second article charges that the president obstructed the congressional investigation into his conduct.
Ranking Member Republican Doug Collins says Democrats' claims of being reluctant to impeach the president are not credible.
It is amazing to me that we're taking it now as such a solemn oath that we've made up something to now come to this point to say, this is very solemn, like it jumped up and snuck up on you. It's about like the holiday season. It doesn't jump up and sneak up on you when you've been expecting it the whole time.
Committee is expected to approve the charges Thursday. The full Democratic-led House will likely follow suit next week. Sources say that while Trump initially said he wanted a full-blown, potentially lengthy trial in the Senate, he is now leaning toward a shorter proceeding that would allow him to move quickly past the threat to his presidency. Joining us to talk about this process, Robert Deitz, professor of policy and government affairs at George Mason University. Thank you for being with us. So what do you think of the Democrat strategy in handling all of this?
In my opinion, absolutely yes. One of the things that I think the Democrats were very clever at was not having a huge laundry list of impeachable items. And they could have had three or four or five other ones, obstruction of Mueller investigation and that sort of thing. I think by focusing on two things, A, bribery or extortion vis-a-vis the president of Ukraine, and B, obstructing Congress, it makes it a very easy story to tell. In my experience, if you've got a jury, and in this case, it's not a jury of 12 people, it's a jury of 100, you are much better off with a simple story that can be easily followed and can be then hammered home time after time after time. And so I think they were very smart in doing that. In terms of are these impeachable offenses, the answer is clear. What's ironic is that all the evidence that's needed comes out of the president and the White House. So yes, I think they've made the case.
They are definitely moving forward on this. Republicans, it's not quite clear what their strategy is, but we're hearing that they will not potentially call any witnesses when this ultimately ends up in the Senate for what would be equivalent to a trial.
You can think of the House as a grand jury, effectively putting together an indictment. And if the House votes in favor of the bill, then you can think of that as an indictment. And then it goes to the Senate for a trial.
What do you make of Republicans' strategy? Is still evolving?
Sure.
There is talk that they will not even have witnesses.
And I think I understand why. There's an old maxim in law school that if the facts are on your side, you argue the facts. If the facts aren't on your side, you argue the law. Well, in this case, the facts seem quite straightforward and quite clear, and the notion that somehow bribery is not a high crime is ridiculous on its face, since bribery is actually mentioned in the impeachment provision in the Constitution right after treason. And so what do you do if you're a lawyer? And I ask myself these sorts of things in cases like this. What would I do if I were a defense lawyer? And about the only thing left is to cast doubt on the fairness of the tribunal. And that's what the Republicans are doing. They claim claim that this is a witch hunt, a hoax, that the process is unfair, the president hasn't gotten due process, et cetera, et cetera. And that's not arguing the law, it's not arguing the facts, it's arguing that the tribunal is corrupt.
Well, it would seem that the entire Republican Party, or at least most of them that we've heard, we really haven't heard anyone stray from defending the president. So if their minds are already made up, was it still worth it for the Democrats? Did they do what they felt they needed to as far as their constitutional duty of oversight of a president? Because they're saying that was their only option given the facts in front of them.
Yeah, I mean, you're raising a really good question. There are pragmatists who say, look, getting a conviction in the Senate's almost impossible. Therefore, this is all wasted effort and actually may hurt the Democrats in the elections in 2020. I don't agree with that. It seems to me that there is an argument, an important argument, a powerful argument, for saying we have a constitution here which prescribes a certain kinds of conduct and prohibits other kinds of conduct. And the president has violated his obligation under the Constitution. Therefore, it is our duty to go through this process, even if in the end it doesn't work. I mean, you compare the facts of this case, for example, with the facts of the Clinton impeachment effort. What they were going after him for effectively was having an affair with an intern. This, what's alleged here, is far more serious and far more dangerous to the republic. It's easy to say, no, he's not going to be convicted in the Senate. I'm not quite so clear about that, and here's why. Senate Majority Leader McConnell has said that the rules of the Senate obligate him to have a hearing. In other words, he can't simply convene the Senate and say, I'll entertain a motion to dismiss the case. He says he can't do that, which means that there will be a real trial in the Senate. If there's a real trial, I think it's very hard for Republicans to sit there with their eyes closed and with plugs in their ear and say no for 2 weeks. And so I'm not persuaded that it's a foregone conclusion that the Republicans will find the president not guilty.
The president at a rally this week, a campaign rally, basically told the crowd that charges don't even amount to a crime. What would, from a legal perspective, your response to that be?
Well, that's nonsense on its face. Bribery is a crime. Extortion is a crime. Just because ultimately the money was passed over to Ukraine doesn't undermine any of that. Attempted murder is as serious as murder. Attempted bribery is as serious as bribery. And there's another point I think it's worth mentioning, and that is, for all the bravado, President Trump is facing a humiliation, meaning he will be only the third president to actually have a bill of impeachment actually issued. President Nixon, as you recall, resigned before there was a vote on his impeachment in the full House. And for a person who is so needy with adulation, to go down as, you know, one of the three presidents who went through this ordeal is a humiliation.
All right. That is Robert Deitz, professor of policy and governmental affairs at George Mason University. Trump, at a Hanukkah celebration on Wednesday, vowed to fight anti-Semitism.
With one voice, we vow to crush the monstrous evil of anti-Semitism whenever and wherever it appears. And we're working very hard on that. And I can tell you that we have a lot of people in government working very, very hard on that.
Trump plans to sign an executive order targeting anti-Semitism, particularly at the nation's colleges. AP correspondent Walter Ratliff reports.
Officials say President Donald Trump's executive order targeting anti-Semitism broadens the federal government's definition of the term. Using the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's definition, that includes criticism of Israel. The Department of Education would have to consider the broader definition when evaluating discrimination complaints under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. Previous attempts to clarify the application of Title VI to anti-Semitic acts have been bogged down in debates over whether Judaism should be seen as a race or as indicative of a national origin. Free speech advocates have expressed concerns that a broader definition of anti-Semitism might be used to limit criticism of Israeli government actions. I'm Walter Ratliff.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. U.S. military leaders and Congress spar over pulling troops out of Syria. The U.S. urges North Korea to stop its provocations and work on a nuclearization deal. Will Boris Johnson's early election gamble pay off in the UK? And an American runner's dream temporarily derailed by her hijab. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The UN Security Council, at the request of the United States, is talking about missile launches by North Korea and a possible escalation of tensions after Pyongyang announced it had conducted what it said was a key test at a satellite launch site. VOA Asia's Ira Melman talks about it with VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir at UN headquarters about what was initially supposed to be just a meeting about human rights.
So it was originally going to be a meeting about human rights. That's sort of become an annual exercise within the Security Council in December. Starting in 2014, the Council has discussed the human rights situation in North Korea, which is deplorable. They've discussed it each year, and that was originally something the United States pushed. They didn't do it in 2018, in part because there was the Singapore summit in June of that year between President Trump and Kim Jong-un. So I think there was some reticence on the part of the United States to bring up something that irritates North Korea at a time when they were really trying to make diplomatic inroads with them. And but we were anticipating them discussing it this year on Tuesday, which was International Human Rights Day. Council members were saying last week they anticipated it, but the Americans sort of blocked that, and they instead are calling for a meeting about recent developments, as they're putting it, on the peninsula, primarily these 13 different ballistic missile tests they've had over the past 6 months and the one on Saturday that you mentioned.
Well, we know that the Trump administration has been trying every which way they know how, or figure out maybe can work out another meeting with Kim Jong-un, or at least moving somewhat closer to North Korea.
I don't know that another meeting would satisfy the North Koreans right now, because they've become really impatient and frustrated, it seems. They've been putting out statement after statement over the last about 2 weeks or so, saying the end of the year was the deadline for improving relations. But when they say improving relations, they mean easing or lifting sanctions on them. And that's their end goal in this. They're struggling under financial sanctions, and they want them lifted. So if they're going to meet again and there's no sanctions relief on the table, I don't know that Kim Jong-un would even want to do that.
Well, what's been the reaction so far with other UN members, Security Council members?
I expect today, frankly, we're going to hear from other Security Council members on both the ballistic missiles, but also on human rights, because just because this isn't an officially a meeting about human rights doesn't mean it won't come up in their statements. So I expect certainly from, for instance, the European members of the Council, of which there are several, that we will hear something about the abysmal situation of human rights in North Korea. And we'll hear concern about the missile tests. The Europeans, we haven't had meetings for quite some time, a public meeting anyway, on this issue. And when there have been launches on two or three occasions recently, the Europeans as a group have come before the press and read out a statement condemning the missile launches, because they're not in, they violate Security Council resolutions. So they don't like when they see them happen.
What else is the U.S. doing to make its point as to what it wants to talk about and not talk about human rights?
Well, they brought in their main North Korea person today from Washington. Stephen Biegun, who's the special representative for North Korea, has come here from the State Department. He had lunch with the 15 members of the Security Council with the ambassadors. He was briefing them in this private lunch session. And then at the meeting this afternoon, Ambassador Kelly Craft will be presiding, because the United States is the president of the Security Council this month. She'll be presiding over the meeting, but with her will also be the deputy special representative, Alex Wong, who's also coming to New York for this session.
She's Margaret Bashir. She is the United Nations correspondent for the Voice of America. Thanks, Margaret.
Mm-hmm. Myanmar's leader and Nobel Peace Laureate Aung San Suu Kyi is defending her government against accusations of genocide. Speaking before the International Court of Justice in The Hague Wednesday, she called the case against her country incomplete and misleading. Martha Vanderwolf reports from London.
Aung San Suu Kyi defended Myanmar's leadership against claims that genocide is happening in the country.
Can there be genocidal intent on the part of a state that actively investigates, prosecutes, and punishes soldiers and officers who are accused of wrongdoing?
The hearings of the case against Myanmar at the United Nations highest court started on Tuesday and included detailed accusations of mass killings, torture, and rape against members of the Muslim Rohingya minority. The Gambia brought the case to the court to ask for protection for the Rohingya. More than 700,000 have fled to neighboring Bangladesh since 2017. Aung San Suu Kyi, once seen as one of the world's greatest human rights defenders, argued Wednesday that the internal conflict might at most have led to potential violations of international humanitarian law. Alison Smith of the NGO No Peace Without Justice says she is eager to see what the court makes of the defense argument.
The fact that there may have been a conflict does not preclude that there might have been genocide. But also the experiences of the Rohingya that we have been speaking with that were unveiled by the Gambia yesterday through the UN fact-finding mission do not speak to an armed conflict, but instead do speak to that genocide has taken place.
A UN fact-finding mission in 2018 found that Myanmar's army showed genocidal intent in its military operations. Hla Kiau is chairman of the European Rohingya Council and demonstrated in front of the court during Aung San Suu Kyi's statement. He says this case is the beginning towards justice for the Rohingya.
We are expecting justice from international community. International Court of Justice will be taking all of the measures to take the action against genocide against our people. Therefore, in this International Court of Justice, we are hoping for justice for Rohingya people as quick as possible. At the end of the day, truth will come out.
Aung San Suu Kyi heads the Myanmar civilian government. Myanmar's military rulers had her under house arrest for 15 years. In 1991, she won the Nobel Peace Prize. However, after becoming part of the government, she has routinely denied reports of ethnic cleansing and defended the military. A first ruling on the case and whether or not the Rohingya should be protected is expected within weeks. Marta van der Wolf for VOA News, London.
Europe is seeking to bolster the world's lagging battle to fight climate change with a Green Deal to slash fossil fuel dependence. With fires, floods, and droughts ruining millions of lives around the world, the European Union's new leaders' plan brought cautious hope among activists that other big world emitters will follow the EU's lead. Nonetheless, the pace of action by Europe and other major economies and the kind of transformational change that scientists say is needed to preserve a hospitable climate stoked fury at UN negotiations in Madrid.
For about a year, I have been constantly talking about our rapidly declining carbon budgets over and over again. But since that is still being ignored, I will just keep repeating it.
Swedish teen activist Greta Thunberg rebuked global leaders for dragging their feet.
Only setting up distant dates and saying things which give the impression of that action is underway will most likely do more harm than good, because the changes required are still nowhere in sight. The politics needed does not exist today, despite what you might hear from world leaders.
Conservative youth leaders in the United States launched a nationwide campaign Wednesday to promote a carbon tax to combat global warming, defying the Republican Party and opposition to climate measures by President Donald Trump. The taxation plan would make fossil fuels more costly, while the resulting revenues would be used to promote cleaner, greener alternatives. Trump has denounced climate change as a hoax and started the official process to pull the country out of the 2015 Paris Agreement, a global pact aimed at limiting a rise in world temperatures. He has also slashed regulations on oil and gas drillers and coal miners. Meanwhile, Thunberg, who sparked an uprising of sorts with the world's young people, has been named Time's Person of the Year. AP correspondent Mike Hempen has that.
Greta Thunberg admits she was a bit surprised to be honored by Time, even though she has become the figurehead of a global youth movement pushing for faster action on climate change. Thunberg will be at home in Sweden for the holidays after attending the UN Climate Conference in Madrid, where she encouraged people to take action. On its website, Time credits Thunberg with, quote, sounding the alarm about humanity's predatory relationship with the only home we have. At age 16, Thunberg has become Time's youngest person of the year. I'm Mike Hempen.
You're listening to International Edition. We will be back in a minute.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com. VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation. Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
VOA's International Edition continues. More than 70% of the African forest elephant species have been wiped out, primarily by poachers slaughtering them for their ivory. Park rangers are on the front lines defending them. But in the Central African country of Gabon, these park rangers, also known as eco guards, aren't going it alone. Now the U.S. military is joining the fight by helping to train the rangers who protect the elephants. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb gives us an exclusive look at the counter-poaching effort in central Gabon in part one of this two-part story.
This cadence brings hope to Lope National Park because these eco-guards are training for the fight against poaching, a fight that can turn deadly.
Could somebody brief your medical plan?
And U.S. forces are increasing their chances of survival.
So generally the route we're going to take to do this patrol is leaving the Sedum, head to the main road, and then head south across this bridge.
VOA is the first news media outlet to embed with a U.S. military team during a counter-poaching mission.
Watch where you're stepping. We've seen like giant snakes down there.
U.S. Army Captain Kevin Chapla leads the team.
So right now our training patrol they're about 200 meters from the objective. The suspected camp of about four poachers. From here they're probably going to send out a recon element, see what they can see, come back, develop a plan, and then raid the suspected poaching camp.
Training operations like this one began in Tanzania in 2009, officials say.
We not only help them preserve the wildlife, but at the same time we're disrupting criminal organizations and we're helping them develop a better future.
And U.S. military efforts started in Gabon last year. Months of training has improved techniques to capture poachers and preserve evidence.
J'enlève les chaussures pour essayer de vérifier s'il n'y a pas des papiers cachés ou des informations qui peuvent nous mener à bien... notre mission.
These eco guards are highly motivated individuals, and teaching them is not only fun, but it's easy.
Unlike counter-poaching training from other nations, Chapla says this partnership with Gabon's National Park Agency is geared towards self-sustainment.
Now we're producing a core instructor group that can actually teach the force these skills and promulgate it throughout the entire ranks. Really, it's a proof of concept for them being able to instruct their own, so it's pretty big.
One thing not included in this mission, weapons training, something the Rangers say they desperately want. That's because until this year, the government didn't allow eco guards to carry weapons.
You can't say to a poacher, oh, sorry, guys, stay quiet and give me your gun.
3 months ago, we were not allowed to carry weapons. Now we have weapons, and the poaching is decreasing.
Officials hope these changes, along with additional international training and support, will accelerate Gabon's counter-poaching offensive. But time is running out for the elephants, and it may not be enough.
So I'm proud that we've made the progress that we've made, but it's still catastrophic, so we still have to do more. You may win some battles, but the war keeps going.
And so the foot soldiers in that war keep marching on, determined to protect the endangered elephants for their country and for the world. Carla Babb, VOA News, Lope, Gabon.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to a recent assessment, Greenland is losing ice 7 times faster today than in the 1990s. The appraisal indicates that if the current rate of ice melt on the world's largest island continues, some 100 million people will be flooded each year by 2100. When you add in ice melt from other parts of the world, that number of people affected jumps to around 400 million by the end of this century. The recent Greenland ice melt assessment was conducted by nearly 100 polar scientists who belong to an international scientific collaboration called the Ice Sheet Mass Balance Intercomparison Exercise. The group's findings, published in the journal Nature, show that Greenland has lost 3.8 trillion metric tons of ice since 1992. That was enough to boost global sea levels by 10.6 millimeters. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
I do my hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling? Feeling good.
She dances, she sings, she raps, she says what's on her mind. Lizzo is Time Magazine's Entertainer of the Year. The 31-year-old rapper has shot to fame as a musician with a message. After her own battles with being body shamed, she's preaching the word of self-acceptance, and it's a message that is resonating with her fans. At concerts, Lizzo makes the point of self-acceptance over and over again, bringing a contagious positivity with reminders of that self-acceptance. Lizzo is also nominated for eight Grammy Awards at next month's ceremonies. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. We thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Calvin Fowler. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
This is VOA News. I'm